Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of TSFP Presents Cult Heroes, the series that we initially recorded in 2019 exclusively for our patrons at patreon.com/TSFP and which we're now releasing for the wider public. We're talking about cult heroes and this week we've got two pretty obscure figures but very important ones nevertheless for their respective clubs, Valery Karpin and Biri Biri. Hello patrons, welcome to another episode of TSFP Presents Cult Heroes. I'm here with Sid and Al in the Podmobile.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi guys. Hi patrons. So, today's episode, we're going to be talking about Valery Karpin and Biri Biri, two legendary and cult players for both of their respective teams. We wanted to talk about a player from that sort of Celta Vigo side, sort of late 20th century, early 21st century.
The best side they've ever had, probably.
The best side they've ever had, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and there are a number of choices, and we've gone for Karpin.
Yeah, I mean, to talk about the choice process, we wanted to talk about Alexander Mostovoy. That was the first player that we thought we were going to talk about.
Yeah, the man who was known as the Tsar of Balaidos.
My favourite historically inaccurate photo shoot involved him.
I was going to say... inaccurate nickname because he wasn't in fact a czar.
But it's almost as bad. Front page of, I can't remember if it was Marca or Ass, a picture of Alexander Mostovoy, the czar. And of course, because he's Russian, they've got him wearing one of those communist hats.
Yes.
I mean, there is a fundamental misunderstanding of the Russian Revolution going on there, isn't there?
Yes.
So we were going to do Mostovoy, but in the end, we didn't feel comfortable because one of the many incidents throughout his career that took place was a really deeply unpleasant one.
Which I must admit I didn't know about.
Yeah, but which there is footage of on the internet, if you want to go and see it. It's quite shocking and quite nasty. It's a bust-up between him and Jalminia in the Galician derby, in which he does a monkey gesture on the pitch at Jalminia, and it's horrible. And so we didn't want to do it.
So we thought he can't really be a hero for us anyway, in any respect. So that's why we're not doing Alexander Mostovoy.
But we've got another Russian
who played for Celta Vigo in the same team.
Oh, is he a Russian?
He was Estonian.
He believes he's a Russian, yeah.
He says that he's part of the Russian minority from Estonia. Yeah. Of course, born in the former, in the USSR,
born in Tallinn,
what is now Estonia. It's the border town of Narva, which is right on the border between modern-day Russia and Estonia, literally.
I have got an Estonian neighbour, and she considers herself Russian as well.
Yes.
Interesting.
I've got a Lithuanian colleague, and she considers herself Russian as well.
Yeah.
I can't add to this. I've got no Eastern European connections.
Our long list of Eastern European people that we know.
So Valery Karpin, he was a very good player. He's a very handsome man, I thought. Oh, he's aged well.
In some photos, he sort of looks a lot more handsome than others. I actually think he looks more handsome now.
Yes, he's aged very well.
Than maybe he did then. And now,
he looks
in fact,
sort of scraggy then.
Yes.
He's got a bit of a beard going on now. He's a very successful coach. He's coach of FC Rostov in the Russian league, and at the time of recording they are second in the Russian league, level on points. There's four teams that are level on points at the top, and his Rostov side are one of them.
Yeah,
so his coaching career is going really well, which is just as well, because after his playing career ended, he's been through a lot of ups and downs, Valery, including being a failed property developer. So I'm glad that things are looking up for him now.
Well, I mean, his property portfolio is quite something. You were saying this and I went and had a look at it. If you type Valery Karpin into the search engine in El País, you basically have to go for an entire page worth of articles before you get anything about football, because all of these articles are about his various construction companies going bust.
It's a chronicle of the Spanish sort of 21st century property boom and bust, isn't it?
What I loved about it is the names of his companies. basically, he doesn't have a huge amount of imagination, right? All of his companies, and there are many that aren't construction, by the way, are called Valerie Carpin something. So you've got VK Moda, VK Fashion. You've got VK Telecommunications. You've got Valerie Carpin and Associates. You've even got the Fundación Valerie Carpin. And I think there was another one. There was another one which I think was called Valerie Carpin Developments. Mm. Basically, everything he's. I mean, it's fair enough. It is what it says on the tin, I suppose.
I mean, we'll get to the football, I promise, in a second. But it is. I mean, yeah. To summarise this stage of his career, he bought up right in the historic centre of Vigo, a city that, you know, you in particular, Phil, have waxed lyrical about many times on the pod.
But that did need redevelopment.
There's this little area called the Barrio do Cura, which is just overlooking, is right in the old town, overlooking the port. There's some incredible old kind of crumbling buildings, one of which I think was an old people's home where kind of monks or something sort of looked after the old people.
Yeah, there was an asylum that,
it's right in the heart of the city. They wanted to redevelop this and make it into flats. It came about at the worst possible time, just before the crash and the financial crisis. But apparently, according to El País, as Sid says, it's now finally getting moving. But I think Carpin might have moved on. It's now a different property company.
He was, of course, involved with Michel Salgado, and between the two of them, they are pretty much the biggest property developers in Vigo.
So look, all of this, we couldn't have talked about this with Mostovoy.
No, and also, actually, you know, we talked a lot throughout this series about the way that players are cult heroes, in part because of their identification with the city and with the club.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing that he did, and I've got the list here. I'll see if I can find it. He also, basically, through these developments, decided to sponsor a whole load of sports teams in the city. So he sponsored rugby, he sponsored basketball, he sponsored football sala. His daughter ended up playing for the Vigo basketball team as well. And so, you know, this is, because, by the way, because his wife was a professional basketball player, his estranged wife, I believe now, although I don't want to cast aspersions on that relationship because I'm not 100% sure about that.
Well, let's not do it.
But there you go. So this is a guy who very much identified himself with Vigo. And for those of our listeners who don't know this, I think this kind of thing is really significant when in Spain, when you don't live in Madrid or Barcelona. If you're from a small city and you're seen to embrace that city, I think Spain's quite... said without any desire to annoy anyone, quite provincial in that sense. I think there's a real sense of pride if someone comes from the outside and embraces a city that's not a huge big city. So someone like this who says, not only do I play for Celta Vigo, and also obviously also Real Sociedad.
I was going to say, he's a cult hero also.
And obviously
for
Real Sociedad and Valencia. And by the way, if you have three cities to live in Spain and you choose not to go to Valencia or San Sebastian and you identify more closely with Vigo, that's even more powerful. I think that actually makes a real impact on the way that people take to you.
Also, I guess it helps being involved with the best team that the club has ever had.
Yeah, and there was I was looking this up, and to take it back to our original thing about who we could have chosen, the list of the best players in Celta Vigo's history, a poll on Marca. Now, admittedly, these polls shift with time, but the poll goes Carpin in third, Mostovoy in second, and of course Lord Barrington of Aspas in first. And actually, we could almost have done this on Barry.
Of course we could, but we talk about Barry every week. Exactly. So it feels redundant almost.
And also Carpin's a nutter. That's the other thing to kind of factor
in. Okay, well let's get into that then.
Well, Carpin is a guy who had his own chat show for a while.
Okay.
Famously wound people up enormously. There's a great
Sorry, where was the chat show?
On Galician TV.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, where he would talk to people in a slightly cliché manner, but it was and dress very kind of flamboyantly. He would always be outspoken. There's a story that I found that actually I wrote from years ago now, 2006, I think it was, where he has a confrontation with Albert Luque and decides that rather than just, you know, do what players do, maybe have a go at him post-game, he releases a statement after the game, a written statement, basically accusing the referee of allowing, and he was right, by the way, allowing fans to shout abuse at him, allowing Luque to have a go at him, because Luque described him as a chulo, which is a great word and difficult to unpack. Cocky, arrogant, smart ass, I suppose. I suppose in one of its incarnations, a pimp.
A pimp.
Chulo,
yes.
Is a pimp. And so he came out with a statement, basically just took Albert Luque apart point by point and took apart the referee for, as he said, allowing fans to say def to Carpin, you know, die you Russian son of a and stuff, and son of an F, I don't know what I was talking about there. And it's just, I mean, it's just extraordinarily carping.
So should we just briefly kind of track his career and go chronologically, because we've gone all over the place.
And as you said, he is a cult hero for Celta Vigo, but he had many years in Spain.
And actually was very, very popular in San Sebastián.
And he was at La Real twice. Yes. Because, of course, he started in Russia, played for Spartak, briefly coincided with Mostovoy at Spartak as well, and they developed their relationship
there. There's a fantastic photo of those two at Spartak Moscow in Spain in some sort of pre-season game.
They even went to Vigo on that tour.
They went to Vigo.
And I think either him or Mostovoy said later on that when he actually came to sign for Celta, he hadn't remembered that he'd been to Vigo until he turned up. He's like, this place looks familiar.
Oh, yeah. And the photo's amazing because, I mean, in the way that old photos always look amazing now, because you sort of forget how things aren't timeless, the way people dress, the way photos look. But that photo is amazing. They look incredibly young, the two of them. And they look incredibly mischievous as well, which of course they were.
Yeah. So yeah, he was at Spartak, joined Real Sociedad in 1994. That first spell, he had 2 years there until 96. And that was a pretty successful one. It wasn't as successful as his second spell at Real Sociedad. Then he went to Valencia for a year. That was a bad year. That was the year that Valencia started off being coached by Luis Aragonés, ended up being coached by Jorge Valdano. They finished mid to the bottom half of the table, and Carpin has subsequently said he didn't have a good time, it didn't work out, there were a lot of off the field problems. That was when Valencia were aspiring at that point to greatness, but they hadn't yet achieved the greatness that they would go on to achieve a couple of years later.
Well, in fact, and of course he leaves Valencia, it doesn't work at Valencia, and there's an interview with him towards the end of his career when he's asked, and again this filters into this idea we talk about, the identification with the club and the personality and stuff. He's asked later in his career, is it not that great Spanish phrase, a thorn in your side? Is it not an espina clavada? The fact that you never played for a big club. To which his response is, no, because I did. And anyway, I wanted to be happy. I wanted to play happy.
Sid,
and actually, Celta were a big club with him. 5 years in a row in Europe.
Tell us what kind of player he was, because we haven't really talked about
Right, okay. So,
and you would have seen him.
Yeah,
for the
first I saw time. A lot of him. Yeah, I mean, as I say, I found the
although, so did you, Al.
Or did you? Because he destroyed Arsenal.
Yes.
So you probably would have seen him play.
Weren't you in Vigo for that game?
Was he in that team? I know that Mostovoy was. The first ever game I went to, we've talked about this before, the first ever game I went to in Spain was at Balaidos in the Champions League, Arsenal against Celta, the game that Arsenal won 3-2
Was Carpin
in that team? See, I know Mostovoy was, but I can't remember the 11. Anyway, yeah. I'll look it up as you guys carry on talking.
Here comes the police car again, amazingly. This is incredible. Anyway, so
they probably recognise us.
Yeah,
now,
they probably do. So that's those guys. Yeah. So in 2004, I wrote about him, and just to kind of to put this into context, and I'll go on to the footballing element in a minute, I describe him as, for 11 years, he's been La Liga's best wind-up merchant. So there you go. That's Carpin in a nutshell. He was a brilliant player. He was a player. So Mostovoy was the kind of the off-the-striker, creative one. Carpin actually, I think, in a way, was more creative in terms of the volume of chances that he made. Playing on the right wing, very direct, very, very... not sort of quick in the sense that you'd look at him and go, look, he's like Jesus Navas. But he would get away from people by going at them. He would go past them without it being wonderfully precise, the technique, but he was skillful. He put in an awful lot of crosses. And so in that second spell at Real Sociedad, for example, when they nearly won the league, based basically on De Pedro and Carpin on the wings, putting endless balls into the box for Nihat and for Darko Kovacevic at the time.
So that was his first season at La Real. That was 2002-2003. They finished second, 2 points behind Madrid. Yeah. By the way, editor's notes, by the time that Celta played Arsenal, that was 2004,
right.
He was at La Real.
Right.
So he wasn't in that team. But he was
in that team. I think he played 30-odd times, 32 times in Europe for Celta at a period when Celta weren't supposed to get into Europe every year, and they did. Mm. It ended badly, though, because he fell out quite badly with the president, Horacio Gomez, which is why he left. But yeah, as a player, he was that kind of... He was pugnacious. He would go at people. He was aggressive. He would want the ball all the time, even when things were going badly. And I thought he was a brilliant player. An out and out right winger. But not really a touchline hugger. But he would play wide, go beyond people on the outside, go beyond people on the inside, come into the area, score goals, and cross after cross.
Talking about that second spell at Real Sociedad, as I say, finished second in the league in 2003, which is incredible to think about now. You know, this is the best modern La Real, but you know, have to go back to the 80s to go to a better one. And then that Champions League campaign the following season, 2003-2004, they qualified from their group ahead of Galatasaray and Olympiakos. I'm sorry to report, Kitro.
Which was pretty impressive, you must say.
They were knocked out, but yeah, I mean... They were knocked out by Lyon in the last 16. But still, for Real Sociedad to be playing Champions League football at that stage was... And this was a time when there were a lot of good Spanish teams as well. I know that Madrid and Barcelona are ups and downs, but you've got a very good Valencia, you've got a very good Depor, you've got a good Celta as well.
Yeah, and actually, if you look at it, you can take it from a Galician perspective, and for a while, Celta and Depor were two of the best. For a six-year period, they were two of the best four or five teams in Spain consistently. Consistently, those two. Hence, we come back to this confrontation with Jalmino, because that was a great Depor team as well.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
One more interesting thing off the pitch, yes. By the way. He had a case, a legal case, that went all the way to the Supreme Court.
I spoke to him on the phone about this. This how is how long I've lived in
so
Spain.
So the technicalities are maybe not quite as interesting. It was basically about whether he would be treated as a European citizen or as a non-EU player being Russian. There's like a treaty about how Russians should be treated in the EU. And there were financial implications for this, i.e. Yes. It was better for him financially to be treated as a European, as not. He wasn't by the Federation.
Yes,
he
right.
took it to court. It went all the way to the Supreme Court.
Yes.
Years later, I think actually in 2007, when it ended up, he wasn't even playing anymore, he won. And he got awarded 180,000 euros.
And what it did is it created a new category of players, which I think were called European B. And within, because as you say, I mean, essentially, this is one of the things that's often forgotten about the Bosman ruling. The Bosman ruling is really just the application to football of the Treaty of Rome. And this is effectively I remember at the time this being described as kind of the second Bosman ruling, because this would open up for a series of states that maybe weren't full members of the EU to be treated as European Union members in terms of the movement of capital and labour.
And it probably says a bit about his character as well, that he wouldn't let this go. He took it all the way to... I mean, of course, you have to be someone with means to do that.
With
means,
but to go all the way to the Supreme Court. And also, the other thing, of course, not to be forgotten, and intelligence. Mm-hmm. Because this is a guy who was very problematic at times, but incredibly bright. I spoke to a referee from his era, because obviously aware of his reputation, I messaged a friend of mine who was a referee in this period. I said, tell me about Karpin. He says, oh, Karpin was unbelievable. He said, the thing about players is, he says, and he says, you journalists don't understand this, which is very much like him, because he likes to blame us all the time. He says, you don't understand this, but you sometimes say, well, why is it that so-and-so says muy malo and he gets a yellow card, another person says hijo de puta and he doesn't get a yellow card? He said, because there's something about the tone. And he said, the thing that always struck me about Karpin is he would come at you as if he was genuinely going to hurt you. Now, the tone was incredibly aggressive. It was incredibly nasty. He
said, so his muy malo would be...
His muy malo. Muy malo, hijo de la... Yeah, I mean,
six-game ban.
And he said Karpin was incredibly... that great Spanish phrase is one of those that comes as if he's going to perdonarte la vida. You know, if you get away with it, you've got to feel grateful that you've got away with, you know.
And when you hear him speak in Spanish, by the way, his accent and everything is perfect. He obviously was here for such a long time that he sounds...
And he came with none. He didn't come with any.
Completely fluent.
So there we go, Valerie Karpin. There was plenty to talk about in the end. And I'm sure we could have gone on a little bit more, but we have to move on and talk about another cult hero, the man known as Biri Biri.
The best Gambian footballer of all time.
I'm not going to say the only Gambian footballer of all time in Spain, but probably not far off.
I mean, the first, and there haven't been many since.
I mean, just to put that into context, Gambia is a tiny country in West Africa. I think the population is just under a million.
It's the smallest country in West Africa.
Yeah.
I've been there.
You
have? For those who don't know. And it is, for those who don't, I mean, obviously some people know this and say, look, you don't need to tell us. It is literally just a sort of... rectangular strip of land along the river, stuck inside Senegal. It's stuck inside Senegal.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like a lot of African countries. They make no sense because, of course, they're a product of colonialization. And this was an English strip inside a French colony. Mm. Gambia is also one of the poorest countries in Africa. And yet it's curious because it's a poor country without some of the problems that some other less poor countries have.
Mm.
Partly, I suppose, because it's so small. And Biribiri, when I was in Africa, when I was in Gambia, they did actually try and arrange a meeting with Biribiri for me. It wasn't possible in the end, but basically because people couldn't get hold of him because he was kind of a little bit lackadaisical and so on. But he's been involved with a number of kind of sporting and charity projects there.
Well, he was also he was like the mayor of his hometown.
Well, he worked for Banjul, which is the capital. He worked for the council in Banjul. I think the mayor thing might be one of these urban myths.
Oh, really?
But he was involved with the mayor. This was under the previous government, which has now been overthrown in elections in 2000. I'm not sure.
Recently,
the current president of Gambia, and this is a side issue, but I just like this story so much. Was a security guard in Argos in London, and an Arsenal fan.
Wow.
Adama Barrow. Yeah.
There we go. All right, so back to Biribiri.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Who played for Sevilla in the 70s. He was their first ever black player.
Yes, and obviously we'll come on to this in a minute. One of the reasons why he's famous is because, of course, he gives his name. Why it becomes significant, he gives his name to Sevilla's now most significant supporters club. He was a right-winger stroke forward, very quick, very dynamic, athletic without being big. So he was kind of an agile athlete rather than a powerful athlete, although clearly quite powerful as well. Some of the footage of him is lovely, him running directly at people getting very excited. And that kind of player that makes people exciting. And let's not be coy about it, the sense of exoticism, because here's a black player in Spain and here's a foreign African player in Spain, at a time, of course, where this is the first generation of foreign players coming in, because, of course, there was a ban on foreign players, which gets lifted with the arrival of Hugo Sotil and Johan Cruyff in 74, I think it is, and he comes that same year.
In fact,
it's still very unusual.
I was looking back at some of the newspaper clippings from the days that he signed for Sevilla, and every single time he's mentioned, it describes him as the player of colour, Biribiri. Yes. Like that was the way that it was.
Actually, that is also true, incidentally, of reports of Laurie Cunningham signing. What is it? Four years later, is it? I think 78.
I mean, he joined while Franco was still in power.
Yes.
I mean, just to give you an idea of the context of what was going on in Spain at the time. Obviously, it was the twilight of his dictatorship, but he was still in power. Still a dictatorship.
Yeah.
So just to enhance that exoticism.
He was here throughout that transition. He was here from 73 to 1980. So what a time to be in Spain.
Why do you think then that they're called the Biris now, the Biris Norte, the supporter group. Why did they take him as their idol, as their hero?
I was going to say there's an interesting documentary. Actually, to be honest, most of the documentary is not hugely interesting, but there is a documentary online.
There's a documentary.
About the foundation of the Biris. And really and truly, it's like a lot of supporters clubs, that it's sort of incidental. It's just kind of a name to be chosen. But it does start with him, and it starts with him and the excitement of him. Then that supporters club kind of drifts away a bit, then kind of gets rekindled, if you like, because it's officially not formed, I think, until sometime in the mid-80s, 84, 85. But it starts with him. There is a suggestion from one of the founder members that this is done because he's black.
Yes.
Because there is this idea that we want to be the first anti-racist supporters club in Spain. Now, I must confess, I don't know how far I buy that, because I'm not sure that there's necessarily a move towards an anti-racist statement, if you see what I mean, at that point. I do think there's a sense of exoticism, there's a sense of excitement, there's a sense of, oh, this guy's brilliant, let's be him. Because this is a brilliant player, by the way. This is a guy who some people consider the best African of all time, although I suspect that George Weah and Samuel Eto'o probably mean that that's no longer the case.
Well, here's a couple of quotes
quote about him being better than Pele, isn't there?
Former teammates. This is El Hadji Babu Sowe, who says, I class Biribiri even above Maradona, because he was a great goal scorer, dribbler, could play with both feet. Biribiri is the best player Africa has ever produced.
Yeah.
Another teammate, Omar Salah, said he was a complete footballer, the best by anybody's standard. He used to save the day for Gambia when things were rough with his skills. He's the best player I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, and that's obviously a Gambia national team that wasn't successful at all. So saving the day doesn't mean going on and winning titles. But he was one of those cases of a player kind of from an isolated small country who is just so much better than everyone else.
I mean, he said himself,
a freak.
He said himself, I was unable to win anything in my career at club and international level. That's the most unfortunate thing. But with Sevilla, his notable achievement was getting them promoted. In his second year there, they went up from the Segunda to the first division. So that's obviously probably his greatest achievement.
Yeah. And so then what happens, in a way, and as I say, it's partly chance, that he gets taken on by a supporters club that is run by people who have perhaps more of a commitment to noise and taking drums and stuff into the ground and banners and really creating an atmosphere than the other supporters clubs there. So it's not that because this is called Biribiri, everyone joins onto it, but because the one that is called Biribiri is the most kind of fanatical, if you like, that this becomes almost a culture, and it becomes the beginning of a culture of travelling away with the team when many fans aren't doing it. Then, as I say, there's a lull, and I think they even disband momentarily for a bit, and then they become formally a supporters club in the 80s. There's actually a moment when Biri comes back to Seville, I think it's in 2017, but it might be 2015.
He's been back a couple of times in
when the Biris are in the midst of this suggestion that they've been involved in violence, and he actually comes out publicly and says, I want to tell my supporters club with my name that we cannot have violence, that we cannot go down this route. And actually, that does seem to have made quite an impact. The footage is lovely, by the way.
He was back as recently as last month, actually. He was at the game against Real Sociedad. He's 71 years of age now, because he was born in 1948.
He does look very slim, doesn't he? He looks slightly frail.
But very, very happy, like very really happy. Kind of smile, laughing and joking when he's doing his interviews and all that.
Did you hear the Derby County story? I found this
Went on trial.
He went on trial at Derby County. Brian Clough was the manager. Derby. Didn't like him. Didn't rate him enough to sign him anyway. And there's this lovely story where this guy is playing in the streets with his friends, and Biribiri comes in and joins in. And for some reason that's not entirely clear in this story, there's a photograph taken of Biri playing on the streets with these kids. And about 30 or 40 years later, there's one of these kind of municipal exhibitions at the local council, a series of photos, you know, life in Derby in the 70s or whatever it is. And this guy goes in and he sees this photograph of him playing football with Biribiri like 30 or 40 years later. And this kind of, this is incredible. Here is Biribiri, who Clough didn't fancy.
So obviously his major time in Europe was in Seville, but he
came from Denmark.
He played in Denmark. In Africa, he played for some interesting teams.
They've got some really good names. In Gambia, he played for Black Diamonds, White Phantoms, and he went to Sierra Leone to play for Mighty Blackpool.
Wow.
I love the idea.
That's one of the best football names I've ever heard.
I don't know about you.
I want to support Mighty Blackpool.
Exactly. If I was a Blackpool fan, I would be going there just to be able to say that I'd seen Mighty Blackpool play. It's brilliant, isn't it? Africa is full of clubs like that are kind of taken. Actually, it happened in Uruguay and across Latin America as well. I remember Luis Suarez once saying that I think his first game he played was against Liverpool.
Yes.
The Uruguayan Liverpool.
Yes, the Uruguayan Liverpool. Obviously, Bolivia is famous for that as well, having some unbelievably incredible...
Is it in Bolivia where Deportivo Wanka is?
I think that might be Argentina, but the, sure. Bolivia have the strongest.
The strongest are my favourite.
Yeah, the strongest.
Yes, but also they've got some other great names as well. We digress.
We've got a long way. That's a pretty major tangent, all the way to Bolivia.
Yeah, but these are great names.
From Gambia.
These are great names. Anyway, as I say, so Biribiri was this fantastic player, and it does live on through the supporters club. And in a way, that is why he's a name. Because I think if he'd been a player like this, he would have been one of these kind of, do you remember that guy who was amazing for a couple of years and everyone was excited and then he went and other players have been along and other players... Because, you know, this is like a lot of these cult heroes we talk about. There are players who are better than them. There might well be players who in purely footballing terms have had more of an impact. But something lives on. In this case, it really lives on through the desire to create an atmosphere for a group of people who took his name at that time and kept it going. Because the Biribiris could have faded out, could have disappeared. But they didn't, and that is where they are. And also, obviously, because they have him as, if you like, the poster boy, is not the word I'm looking for, what do you call it? The standard bearer, if you like, the image of
I mean, they literally
club.
Have
yes,
they,
exactly.
Yes, on their phone.
That, I think, has enhanced that idea that even if it wasn't a supporters club that necessarily wanted to make a race anti-racist statement then, it has become one now.
Mm. Yes. So there we go. Biribiri and Valerie Karpin are the latest...
Two right wingers,
yes, on the pitch.
Yes. I know not what their politics are off the pitch.
So there we go. Thanks for joining us. There'll be another episode of Cult Heroes out in a couple of weeks, so make sure you join us for that. Adios.
Cheerio.
Bye.